Broadcasting from the Gulag city of Planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. I'm Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. After our interview, we will name the Cultural Baggage Coward or Hero of the Week. In a few minutes, we will bring in our guests for the evening, Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry, a registered nurse. They are the co-founders of Patients Out of Time. First, it's a local story with strong national ramifications.
Late last week, the best mini market on North McGregor was told by the city of Houston to close their doors because too many drug sales had gone on near their premises. This is Florence Wynn, the daughter of the owner of the store.
We have been communicating with Councilmember Edwards' office as well as Councilmember Gordon Kwan's office, and the meeting was called by Councilmember Edwards. And this morning's meeting was actually very productive and very proactive and progressive. We found that we could work on a cooperative effort rather than closing the store.
Thinking surely they must have received numerous notices for the city to take such drastic action, I posed that question to Councilman Kwan.
The first notice they received was a letter from the city advising that they had 10 days to close their business down.
Seeming to take the situation well in stride, here's the response of Ms. Wynn.
That the average citizen is not supposed to take the law into their own hands. And where HPD is coming into this, they're saying that as a business owner, you need to, you know, have some responsibility for what's going on. And I agree to that point to a point, but for the most part, I think that all you can do really is place a call.
And so what is the solution? How are the Wynns able to keep the best mini market doors open?
The items they've asked them not to sell: roses and tubes, single cigars, Brillo pads individually. Those are amongst the items that the police have determined could be improperly used as drug paraphernalia. What are the police for? What are we spending our money for? What is their responsibility? Aren't they supposed to be doing the policing?
I believe there should be intermediary steps. I believe it should be, you know, interactive, a cooperative effort, rather than build a case for 2 years and not inform the local business owners what's going on in the community.
Well, there's certainly a reluctance on the part of Ms. Wynn to rush into the street outside of the store and to tell these people to go away. They express the fear that the people will be shooting back at them and saying, and trying to seek reprisal against them.
And well they should, for just last October in Detroit, a lady who snitched on the local drug dealers had her front door kicked in. A drug dealer poured gasoline into the front room, lit the house on fire. She and her five children and her husband died as a result.
This country has lost its way. Common sense has been thrown out the window. Did you know the cardboard tube and every roll of toilet paper makes a great little mini bong? Okay, it's time to meet our guests for the evening. First up, I want to say hi to Mary Lynn Mathry. Are you there, Mary?
I'm here.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us here on Cultural Baggage.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, if you will tell my listeners just a quick summary of your history, your nursing career.
Well, I'm a registered nurse. I've been so for about 30 years, working in acute care. Past 17 years working in addictions field, and have been with our organization, Patients Out of Time, since we founded that in 1995, trying to educate the public about the therapeutic use of cannabis.
Well, Mary Lynn, I was quite astounded today. Y'all sent me a press release that the American Nurses Association has now called for patient access to medical marijuana. And tell us a bit about that. How many people are involved, and what does that mean?
That we consider a huge win for patients trying to get access to therapeutic cannabis. The American Nurses Association represents 2.6 million nurses in the United States. And for that to pass, all the state organizations have their delegates, and they went together and voted this June passing that said resolution. Prior to that, 10 state nurses associations had passed similar resolutions, which was a lot of our work getting that done. And finally, it came to fruition, and the American Nurses Association took it on.
And said.
basically said that, patients should have access to legal access to therapeutic cannabis. Healthcare professionals should not be punished for talking to patients about it. Nurses should be educated about the therapeutic use. It was really, really opening up, you know, hopefully dialogue about this.
Well, Al, I did I hear you in the background there, sir?
Yes, I am here, Dave. Hi.
Hi, Al. Yes, sir. Earlier today, you talked about that there was a deadline on a press release and that we're now past that point in time. What is the announcement, sir?
Well, it's good news. Most of the folks that are interested in this issue have heard the name of Dr. Donald Abrams, who works out of the University of California in San Francisco. And for years, he's been trying to get permission and therapeutic grade cannabis to do some clinical research on HIV AIDS subjects. And the good news is that Donald Abrams has published in the Annals of Internal Medicine just this past month the report of a short-term medical cannabis study on this issue, which emphatically says that its use does not harm HIV patients. This is great news. It confirms the fact that cannabis use therapeutically is not an endangerment to the immune system of humans. And this test, by the way, was conducted using both whole cannabis in smoked form as well as dronabinol, which is an oral medical cannabinoid-type medicine.
A lot of folks may know that as Marinol, am I correct?
That's correct, yeah. It's Marinol.
Yes, sir. Well, that is great news. You say therapeutic cannabis. Was this the Mississippi-grade stuff, or were they able to obtain something else?
That was from NIDA. It was Mississippi stuff. So it's the not-so-high-quality marijuana.
Right, right. Okay, well, it's excellent news. The more chances we have to show that this is not a harmful product, the better.
Exactly. The fact that the smoked patients did just as well, if not better, than the others is wonderful news. And again, pointing to the fact that the short-term use is not going to be harmful to the patient.
Now, if I'm to understand correctly, I mean, it's been shown that it does not harm. It certainly doesn't kill. It doesn't harm the liver, the kidneys, or the other body organs. And that it, rather than being perhaps a medicine of last resort, might be one that we should look at in the beginning of a person's affliction. Is that correct?
Right. cannabis, in terms of the body systems, has a really low toxicity to the organ systems. And for many of the prescribed medications available today, they can be toxic to the liver or the kidneys and produce some harmful effects, long-term effects for patients, sometimes irreversible. And for that reason, very often, I would say that cannabis should be a first drug of choice to try to see if that helps, because it's the least harmful, as opposed to being used as a last resort, which is what they push. You know, if anybody gives an inch, they say, okay, if nothing else works, let's try cannabis. It's backwards.
Indeed it is. I'm looking at the list here of the resolutions from the American Medical Association, and the first one says support research in controlled investigational trials. And, you know, the thing is, the government controls access to it. They cause delays every chance they get, I guess, through the HSA and the DEA and all the various, alphabetical organizations. How do you fight that? I mean, obviously, the Dr. Donald Abrams has been able to get through that procedure, but isn't it exceedingly difficult?
Right. Donald Abrams has been very, very persistent to get his studies through. It's been very difficult. But in terms of the what the American Medical Association said, they're being much too cautious on this. The Institute of Medicine, its 1990 report, basically cleared the way. They said there's enough research on cannabis. In fact, there's tons of research on cannabis to say that it is safe enough for patient use. And that's the primary reason for all this research, for any new drug to ever be done, is to make sure it's safe enough for patient use. And the IOM was very clear on that, saying it is safe enough, so we should open those doors and let research begin to find out which preparations are better or which conditions is it better for, not research just to find out if patients can use it. That's done. That should not be an issue anymore. It should now just be an issue to find out how to refine what we know.
Indeed, Mary Lynn. Y'all work with the federally supplied medical marijuana patients. Tell the listeners who those people are, if you would.
Let me jump on this one, Dean. Well, there are seven living cannabis patients that are supplied their medicine by the federal government. Two of those folks have, for years, wished to remain anonymous, and we, of course, honor that request. The other five, however, are quite vocal, and frankly, we consider them heroes in that they speak out publicly, often, in all kinds of forms, in the press, and they basically criticize the same government policy that gives them their medical cannabis. They are in no particular order. Irv Rosenfeld, who is the longest now cannabis receiving federal patients since Bob Randall's death, and he's a stockbroker down in the Fort Lauderdale area. Elvie Masika is known to many folks. She's a crusader in this area. She lives in the California, Northern California area, and virtually travels the world on a yearly basis to promote the therapeutic use of cannabis. Another one of our patients is Corinne Millette, who is an elderly lady with glaucoma in a wheelchair, the widow of an MD that lives in Nebraska, and is on our side and is a member of our board of directors, actually, but because of her illness and sickness is not able to be very public. Another wonderful example of cannabis use is in an MS patient, Barbara Douglas, who lives out in Iowa. Barbara is, when we first met Barbara, Mary Lynn and I, she was blind, essentially, because of the MS, and she walked infrequently and with great difficulty and with a cane. And after several years of this rather inferior cannabis product that comes from the government, nonetheless, with a couple of years of her use, she met us one day, she walked us out to her vehicle. She drove us around the block a couple of times.
Oh, my.
She walked back into the house. And after spending a couple of days with her, as we left, she got on a jet ski and skied off across the lake. it was wonderful. It was exhilarating just to see that. And then George McMahon is the final five, member of the final five. He's also a member of our founding board of directors. And George uses his for a very rare disease, but it essentially, again, has, through its use, achieved a wonderful quality of life and is a national spokesman for the whole issue. Just a wonderful man.
Well, Al, if I may say then, John Walters tours the country saying there is no medical use of marijuana. Is this man not lying every time he opens his mouth?
You know, I don't want to call any man on earth a liar. If he says that and he believes it, the only thing I could tell you that the man in his position is woefully unprepared and unread on the subject.
Well,
Steve. He doesn't know what his own government is doing.
Yeah, I mean, all he has to do, Dean, is read his own government report, which, of course, if you wish to remain ignorant and just go on with some sort of ideologue position, is where you want to be. But if you really want to do your job correctly, you inform yourself, you read the documents that Marilyn and I have, that, as she says, there is unbelievable amounts of research on the effects of cannabis. Almost all of it is positive. If a man like Walters, I'm sure he knows how to read, wished to spend the time, he could enlighten himself and know that his position is absolutely contrary to logic.
Yes, sir. I was astounded. I think it was last week or the week before, the new administrator of the DEA, Karen Tandy, was asked on her perceptions of the Institute of Medicine report, and she says she doesn't read those peripheral documents.
Yeah. I mean, you know, she doesn't need to be informed. She already knows what she knows. I think there was a popular song, you know, or something to that order, that I know what I know, don't bother me.
Yes. And, well, even now, I'm looking at the third point from the nurse's resolution, support the ability of healthcare providers to discuss and or recommend the medicinal use of marijuana without the threat of intimidation or penalization. And Ashcroft is wanting to go after all of these guys. Now, they're wanting to crucify Dr. Todd Mikkaria out there.
Right, right. The Ninth Circuit Court out in California had ruled when back when McCaffrey was the drug czar, they tried to scare the physicians out in California when they passed the resolution for medical cannabis that if any physicians recommended cannabis, they would take away their reimbursement from Medicare or Medicaid and that they wouldn't allow them to prescribe any scheduled medication. Well, no physician can earn a living if that's the case. So the... they did a lawsuit. The AMA went back to the federal government saying, hey, you know, what we talk about between us and the patients is private, should remain private. They won that case, but you're right. Ashcroft's going back saying, let's take it to the Supreme Court. They should not be talking to patients about this.
Okay, y'all, I want to take just a 30-second break here. As I do on every show, if you are out there listening and you disagree with us, if you think this drug war is a good thing, if you think marijuana is a bad thing, I'd like to hear from you. We'll take your call a little bit later. Our number is 713-526-5738. And now this quick message.
George W. Bush and suppression of medical cannabis is killing vastly more people and causing vastly more human suffering than even Saddam Hussein could in his worst days. And this is something that the cannabis movement and the peace movement and progressive people every place have to address. If they aren't addressing medical cannabis, they are ignoring something that has an enormous impact on millions of people. Well, if they're too serious to, they can't talk about mass murder, then they have their priorities all screwed up.
Richard Cowan. CannabisNews.com.
Richard's a good guy. He's certainly fighting the battle with us on this issue. I don't know which one of you is online here. I wanted to ask you something here. It says the fourth item on the resolution, support legislation to remove criminal penalties, including arrest and imprisonment for bona fide patients and prescribers of therapeutic medical marijuana. And let's understand something here. How many people have died from marijuana use?
As far as we know, no single death since the 5,000 years or more of its use.
And the criminal penalties are doing what for our society? I just don't understand why we have them. I'm being facetious. I'm sorry here, but the point being, why do we have these criminal penalties? I mean, it's just superstition and fear, isn't it?
You know, you could come up with many, many different reasons for it. I kind of look at it comes down to greed and racism way back when it started. And now it's still hard to figure out. There is no basis for marijuana being in Schedule 1, which basically is the forbidden category of drugs to be prescribed. There's no reason for it to be there. It does not fit. In fact, when it was put in that category in 1970, the Schaefer Commission in 1972 looked at all the facts and said, it doesn't belong there. But Nixon ignored it and said it's going to stay there.
If I may interrupt at this point, Dean, there is a petition that's been accepted by the DEA, that's been submitted to the DEA by a coalition of organizations that represent patients throughout the United States. And the petition asks the DEA to remove marijuana cannabis from Schedule 1 and put it in another schedule. And we have recommended in that petition that they move it into Schedule 5, which would make it equivalent to aspirin. They may not go that far, but Marinol, the synthetic cannabis, if you will, or at least a cannabinoid is synthetic in Marinol, is in Schedule 3, which means in the doctor world that a physician can prescribe Marinol to a patient who he or she believes that it would be productive for basically any reason, off-label. It doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be prescribed for glaucoma or chemotherapy sickness. It could be prescribed for any reason that the doctor thinks appropriate. So in this petition, we have asked them to at least put it in 3, and we recommended 5. And the interesting point here, I think, for your listeners is that they have accepted this petition as a valid petition. They have accepted the position of the patients involved that to do without cannabis as a medicine, they would be done physical harm. And the government now is required by their own laws and regulations, the DEA is required, to evaluate this petition and tell us in writing why they agree with the petition that it should be rescheduled from a prohibited drug, or why they do not agree. And this is an excellent opportunity for folks that are interested in this subject matter of the drug war to start to pay attention to this petition and to probably bring some attention maybe politically to it. They can find information on this on the Internet, very, very detailed information about medical marijuana, thousands of references concerning medical marijuana at www.drugscience.org, drugscience.org. But it is another attempt by the patients of the United States as a group to ask the federal government to reassess the scheduling process of cannabis. As Mary Lynn points out, it does not belong where it is. Let's just put it where it is, and then we can all get on and have a healthier life.
Yes, indeed. Alla, the sixth point I see here on the resolution from the American Nurses Association, and it says to support and encourage the education of registered nurses regarding current evidence-based therapeutic use of cannabis. And that's happening, isn't it? I mean, many of the nurses across this nation are well aware of the efficacy of this product.
Right. As many nurses are aware of it from just either running into patients or somehow, you know, finding stories from other patients or family members. Nurses are at the bedside with patients, and you can't help but see the effects. But the education about its therapeutic value with science-based studies is very much lacking. You gave me the opportunity for us to put in a plug.
Go ahead.
One of the things that Patients Out of Time does is we put on a national clinical conference on cannabis therapeutics. We're doing it every 2 years. This May 2004, May 20th to 22nd, we will have the third national clinical conference on cannabis therapeutics in Charlottesville, Virginia. It's going to be sponsored by the University of Virginia Pain Service at the School of Medicine. Other co-presenters are the School of Nursing, the University of Virginia School of Law, and the Virginia Nurses Association. And frankly, I'm going to take this to the American Nurses Association to hopefully get them to help promote the conference, because I do think it fulfills their resolution. This is an opportunity where nurses can come and get science based information about therapeutic cannabis. And we've got speakers coming from Israel, Raphael Meshulam, who literally is the grandfather of cannabis research. He's the one that first discovered THC back in 1960. We've got Jeffrey Guy coming from England. We've got Dr. Mark Ware from Canada. We've got Dr. Donald Abrams, who will be coming to present his research. So we've got a really high-class group of presenters that will be there May 20th to 22nd, and we will have information on our website, which is www.medicalcannabis.com.
Wonderful, Mary Lynn. And you mentioned Dr. Jeffrey Guy. He was to have been our guest tonight, and he's traveling about Europe. We're going to bring him in September, October. But talk a bit, if you would, about that, plant-based medicine, the sativics, if you would.
Yes, actually, I'm doing some consulting for GW. But GW Pharmaceuticals have made a cannabis extract, so they're using the whole cannabis. They've made it in the form of a sublingual spray, under-the-tongue spray. Their clinical trials have been with patients with multiple sclerosis, MS, or chronic pain, and they've been remarkable. He is very busy right now. He's doing a lot of the work to make sure everybody understands where their clinical trials are, because their hope is that their product will actually be available in England at the end of this year, possibly the beginning of 2004.
Wonderful news that as well. You know, we did get a chance to mention your website, but I want to repeat it for folks out there. You need to go there and stay in tune with the progress these folks are making. And it's at www.medicalcannabis.com. Any thoughts you'd like to relay to the listeners? We just have about a minute and a half here. Something's on your mind, Al?
I guess the point, if we've got any last-minute thing to say, is that we're not trying to sell cannabis as the cure-all for everyone. But as medicines go, this is one of the safest. This was found, way back with the legal case of 1988, when Judge Young ruled that cannabis should be moved out of Schedule I. He called it one of the safest therapeutic substances known to man. And I think that's the point. It helps patients. For those it does help, it helps them so much. It's really a criminal act to keep them from having it. And our name, Patients Out of Time, is pretty much that. People are dying, suffering, when there's no need for it. This medicine is available and could help them immensely.
Well, folks, we've been speaking with Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry of Patients Out of Time, and I want to thank you for coming on Cultural Baggage. We asked for calls, people who would dispute what we're saying, and we'll just have to grok the silence. There's no one out there that can dispute anything you've said. I appreciate you all so much for being with us, and we'll have to do this again real soon.
Anytime, Dean. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you all for being here. Okay. Well, Steve, I guess if you would, let's go ahead and run the Hero of the Week.
In recognition of their outstanding achievements in the field of drug reform, Cultural Baggage is proud to announce the Hero of the Week.
This week's drug war hero is, for the first time, a local man who has begun to see the light about the drug war. He has started to see the futility of the processes of this first eternal war. He understands that we cannot burn the nation down to save it. When I spoke to him last evening, he let it be known that he can't see any way to end the drug war outright, but I don't think he'll have any qualms whatsoever about destroying its mechanisms one at a time. Therefore, for showing he has glimpsed the light of reform, tonight's Hero of the Week is Gordon Kwan.
Houston City Councilman, if you have ideas for Hero or Coward of the Week, please send me an email to dean@cultural-baggage.com. All our shows are stored online as well. Our guest next week will be Sanho Tree of the Institute of Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. We'll discuss the silent war in Central and South America. That's next Tuesday at 6:30. The truth is self-evident. Drug prohibition is a fiasco. This drug war will end the day the major media seriously explores the beginnings, lies, the deceit, and incredible gall that made this drug war possible. All that now holds this bag of lies together is complicity. Drug prohibition has been handed down from generation to generation as if it were the Ark of the Covenant. So few in power dare to look inside. Quote, in addition to what you vow and your free will offerings, prepare for the Lord at your appointed feasts, your burnt offerings, and peace offerings. That's from the book of Numbers, chapter 29, verses 38 through 40. God wants us to live under His law by our own free will. The U.S. Congress wants to prohibit that. Just what kind of evil have we wrought with this drug war? Okay, in closing, I ask that you always remember, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag, so please, be careful. For my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. KPFT, Houston.